We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello, Dirtfish Rally friends. Welcome back to Spin the Rally Pod with myself, Colin Clark, and our head of media.
I had forgot.
And then I had to think, what is it he puts on the bottom of his emails? Oh, yeah. David.
Just to be clear, I don't put head of media at the bottom.
No, he puts them on the top of his emails.
Yeah, obviously.
David, let's just...
It's good to be back.
But it's good to be back. On the podcast, or back here?
No, just back with you. I've not seen you for a while.
It's been a little while, yeah. No, you've missed a couple of rounds.
A couple of weeks, it was quite nice.
You almost sounded sincere there as well.
No, genuinely, I've missed you.
Oh, you're such a sweet lad, sometimes. But tell our listeners, David, where we are, because when you said it's good to be back, I thought you meant it's good to be back in New Zealand.
Always good to be back in New Zealand. We're in room 492 of the... The Scenic Hotel in Dunedin. It's great, isn't it? You know, it takes you a day to get here, and you sat on that plane, and you think, crikey, I hope it's worth it. And you rock up in Auckland, and it's just between, we must keep this quiet in case everybody finds out about this, but it's the best place in the world.
Dunedin, I absolutely love Dunedin. I'm totally with you. And do you know what? I worked out from my front door when I left to when I got to Christchurch, because I stopped in Christchurch last night, 31 hours. Now, it's taken me longer than that to get to Sardinia before, so, you know.
And I have to say, probably, from what I've heard, flight prices, it's probably cheaper to come to New Zealand.
I think it probably
is.
It just looks ridiculous, Sardinia. But it's just lovely to be back. I mean, you know, Dunedin, as we know, is a beautiful part of New Zealand, in the South Island. But from a motorsport perspective, they just absolutely love the rallying down here, don't they? And they've got every reason to love it because, you know, they've got roads that are as good as anywhere in the world.
And in many ways, Carl, the whole Otago, Dunedin, perhaps it's a little bit... Everything in New Zealand tends to be in the shadow of Auckland, doesn't it? Even the fact that Auckland's not the capital. You know, Wellington's the capital.
Is it?
There we are.
Is it?
Yes. Yes.
Wellington's where the parliament is that right?
Yeah.
And that's the capital?
That's the capital. Isn't it usually always where the...
Do you know what? What did you get your joint honours degree in?
Geography.
So you better be right.
It's definitely right. And you know, everything is, you know, there's that whole expression that's you're a Jaffa, aren't you? If you're just another F Aucklander, as in there's so many of them.
Right.
And there is a whole world of New Zealand that's outside of Auckland.
Yeah.
The South Island, I think there is a bit of rivalry between North and South, but this part, Dunedin, it's the Edinburgh of the South. It is a beautiful part of the world.
And there's a statue, isn't there, in the square. What do they call that? The quadrant.
Is it the quadrant?
Robbie Burns statue. But it's a very tenuous link. It's a massively tenuous link. Something like Robbie Burns' fourth cousin's uncle's son came out here, apparently. And that's why there's something like that. It's not quite as tenuous as that.
It's a brief aside here, but I'm listening to a cracking podcast at the moment. It's called Trumped, and it's about when Donald Trump went to Aberdeenshire
and claimed it as his own.
And tried to create the golf course, the world's finest golf course he was going to build. And there were three or four houses that stopped him.
That's right.
And his reason for feeling that he was entitled to go there was because his mother was Scottish.
His mother's proper Scottish.
Yeah, she was born
in the Orkneys,
on the Isle of Lewis or somewhere.
Yeah, way up north.
So apparently he went over there, and it wasn't a publicity stunt, but he only spent 97 seconds in the house that he was born in. Yes. Sorry, that was a bit of a distraction. But yeah. Tam O'Shanter would be, perhaps did he certainly didn't write that here, did
when
he?
When drew the neighbours, neighbours meet, and Chapman Billy's leave the street. You don't want to hear any more of that, do you? No, but it does, it feels, and that's what I love, and I think it's why so many Brits love New Zealand, and particularly the South Island. It just feels comfortable. I know this is very parochial, but you get off the plane, and number one, they drive on the correct side of the road.
Yeah.
The plugs are almost the same, the language, everything. And it,
no
and it looks, it, no snakes. No, the only one of three countries in the world without snakes.
So another one is Ireland. Mm-hmm. Which apparently had something, Chris Meek always said, had something to do with us.
Right. The other one is?
British. The other one is Iceland.
Yes!
Really?
Yes!
See, was I joined on a geography.
That's remarkable.
That was remarkable. But you kind of think you couldn't really imagine a snake living.
No, no, not really. But no, it just feels comfortable here, and it's why it's why we like coming so much. And I was just talking about the, before you got slightly distracted by Tam O'Shanter, just the motorsport heritage down here. You're quite right. You know, North Island is where we associate the WRC. But you know, the first time I came down here, I thought, you could easily run a WRC event on these roads. Yeah. I think the only issue is the infrastructure, isn't it? But, you know, we go to other places that are no bigger than Dunedin, and why not? You know,
totally. And there's, you know, there's other places that aren't far. There's Wanaka, that's a big tourist area, and obviously Queenstown's not too far away. Christchurch is big and it's close by. But you know, I remember talking to people about Otago Rally and competing down here, and people said, "Oh, they're New Zealand roads, kind of without the camber." And I kind of thought, well, what's the point of them then? You know, they can't have anything like the character, but. Chris Meek and Brandon Semenuk are here for the first time, and talking to them, immediately they can see it's not about the camber, it's about the undulation.
Correct.
And that's it. You know, we drove a lot of the roads last year, in particular Currybush.
Yeah.
I mean, we bang on, and apologies to everybody for Currybush and just what a sensational bit of road it is. But it was incredible. Yeah. One of the best 10-milers that we've seen all year. And we'll no doubt drive it again. And it does... It has something special. And yes,
really,
they are a little bit in the shadow of the likes of any of the sort of North Island, Northland stages, but they're just as good down
there. No, they're only in the shadow because...
Because of the World Championship.
Because of the World Championship, not because of the quality. As you see, Currybush is it's every bit as good as the undulating, rolling finish stages, but narrower and more demanding.
Yeah, and that one that went up the mountain where we saw the snow.
Just incredible. Fantastic. Just incredible. So we are very much looking forward to once again enjoying the delights of the Otago Rally. And there is an incredible entry. Goodness me. Yep, we've got clearly Chris Meek here, Brandon Semenuk here. Unfortunately, Hayden Padden isn't with us this time. He's had to go off and do some rally somewhere.
Some noddy thing in Hungary. sorry, Skunner. In Campbell, we are enormous fans of the European Rally Championship. Genuinely, it is...
We are becoming bigger fans.
We are. Well, not,
are you a fan yet?
I am. I've got to say...
Are you?
Yes, because...
Sometimes I can tell when you're lying.
No. I think it's found its place. And I think for reasons that we will come on to, the European Rally Championship's position could be undermined by what's being discussed in WRC Commission and the future potentially for WRC. If they go with Rally 2 Plus.
Of course.
But genuinely now, I think for the first time in years, ERC has found its place. It's become potentially the biggest problem for me with ERC feeding into WRC is the fact that it's not the same rallies.
But this to me is we're being fed that line, David. It's feeding into the WRC.
It doesn't.
Give me some examples.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
It doesn't. And I'm sorry I keep banging on about the IRC days. There was a clear line of progression from IRC into WRC.
But again, that was the same. That's quite hard to figure out because IRC didn't run on WRC rounds.
No.
But maybe it was just the... I think it was the competition. And
it was a little different. It was the way it was set up and the way it attracted dealers and importers as opposed to privateers.
I think ERC is going that way
I think so.
And it
I
will...
Agree.
it will get there.
Yeah.
And it's in this, still in a transitional phase, but it's standing up.
Yeah.
And maybe I think it is, sadly, sad to say, it is actually, you can draw a correlation between Ian Campbell's arrival as manager of the Championship. Perhaps it is all down to the boys, Gunner. Who knows?
Perhaps. Yeah, it's a good friend of ours, Ian Campbell, and he does good things. Ian Campbell is a very, very capable man, and we've known that for years, haven't we?
Almost as capable as his father, Ian Campbell Sr., who's just the loveliest fella.
A proper Scotsman, wasn't he?
A proper guy.
He drove that blooming, that mobile bank around the island of Mull, better than anyone in history.
No, good guys, both of them, and European Championship, it's great. And so Paddon is away. He's gone the opposite direction. He's up to Hungary for the first round of the Championship.
But we still have a fantastic entry list here with some real quality drivers, the best of New Zealand drivers, a fair smattering of drivers from Australia as well coming over this time, David. But more than that, you know, some just incredible cars and quite an eclectic mix of cars here, which I think is great. You know, they're not too restrictive in the regulations. So, you know, so we do see some real innovation with some of the cars that we see out there.
Absolutely. And if you want to read a bit more about what's going on and the cars that are out in Otago, there's three rallies. There's the Otago opening round of the New Zealand Championship, which has got the likes of Emma Gilmore and all of these people who are making hay while Paddon's away.
Yeah.
And looking for a win.
Talking to someone tonight who's saying that Emma's maybe now the favourite. Maybe.
Absolutely. Particularly here. She's Dunedin lady driver. So she,
How fantastic would that be?
Amazing.
Emma Gilmore's a great driver. Had no luck in New Zealand in the past 5 or 10 years. Mm. Basically because she was too loyal to Suzuki. You know, and she kept on with the Suzuki project and on and on and on. The car broke every time. She switched.
Yeah, to the Citroën.
So is it the Citroën this year?
Yeah, C3.
So, you know, I think she's got every chance. And she is a very, very capable driver who's done a lot of competing over the last few years. So
yeah.
It would be great.
But like you said, it is eclectic mix with AP4 cars. Yeah. The likes of Jack Hawkswood.
Yeah.
I almost said Andrew Hawkswood, of course, his father, who would have competed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, lots of different cars. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's one event. Then there's the Otago International 4x4, which is where Sevenuk drives the Subaru and Prezza H6. Then there's the Classic, which is all Mark II Escorts, RX7s.
How many Mark II Escorts?
Just gazillions.
I think there's about 40 or 50 of them. Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. It does remind me, you know, when you look at the cars, the BMWs that are out here, all sorts of bits of everything, it's very, very similar to an ARA round.
Yep.
And that's one of the absolute appeals, is you've got good quality cars at the front, but then you've got just a bit of everything.
A little bit of everything,
and it's very, very entertaining. It's, you know, it's one of those, there's not many rallies these days that you'd go pitch up in a spectator area and happily watch the whole field.
The whole field.
And you really would here, because there's just a bit of everything. So
And drivers all the way down the field that are prepared to have a go.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the best thing about it. They really are on, as we've already mentioned, some of the very best roads.
And testament to the roads, there's one section of Currybush that they do first thing on Sunday morning in the opposite direction. There's between two junctions.
I saw that.
But otherwise, they're single use.
That's
how many roads are.
And do you know what? I also noticed while you were chatting away to Brandon and to Chris earlier on, which you can see, by the way, take a look on our YouTube channel for a couple of videos. There'll be a nice one with David, with Brandon Semenuk and Chris Meek coming up. But go back to this time last year and have a look at Mikko Hirvonen's onboard from Currybush.
Yeah.
Because that is worth watching.
Which was
that
a special delivery for Dirtfish.
Really special, really special, but while you were talking, I was having a look at the map of the rally, and this is really, it's an absolute, it's almost, there's too many stages here. They've got so many to choose from. What's the word I was looking for? Something of riches.
Smorgasbord.
No. Something of riches. What's the saying?
Embarrassment.
An embarrassment of riches. Yes. It's an embarrassment of riches when the organisers get to pick the stages here. Because they're all to the south of Dunedin this year. Last year, remember, we went up north, didn't we? And we went to that wonderful stage that they ran in the WRC all those years ago. Through the valley. None of those stages this year. They're all to the south. No, but there's some great ones. Some great, great stages. But yeah, have a look on our YouTube channel for those videos. Well worth watching. So that's why we're here, David. But there's been a lot going on back in Europe. While you've been in the air and while I've been in the air, it is the WRC Commission meeting. Now, WRC Commission meeting is a talking shop, basically. Nothing gets decided. No rules are changed in the commission. But the commission decide on what goes forward to the
World
Motorsport Council. And that is where, if we see any rule changes, it'll happen then. But the commission is so, so important, because that's where we hopefully find some agreement as to the way forward. What's your take on what's happened in the last couple of days in Paris?
First, it was in Geneva.
Was it?
They moved it.
When I went to the FIA, it was in Paris, darling. But anyway.
it's exactly what you say, Colin. There's a lot of talking to be done. And the stimulus for that talking and that debate has come from the WRC, the working group. David Richards and Robert Reed, obviously it was established at Mohammed bin Salam, President Ben Salam's behest in December last year. He wanted to see progress in WRC, so he set up the working group. And obviously the two of them, and everybody, a much wider group, looked at all aspects of the championship, came up with lots of sporting regulation, potential changes, the chance to bring in more remote services, all that kind of thing, the chance to give more sprint rallies like we'll see in Sardinia.
And all of these things, David, have been overshadowed. All of these things, these are good ideas.
Yeah.
These are good ideas that I think can only be positive.
Yeah.
But all of it overshadowed by one thing.
Totally, by the potential for technical regulation change for 2025. And that's the point here. We've got to be clear. It is next season. It's the season that we're going to be in 7 or 8, 9 months. You know, it's
before we know it
around the corner.
Yeah.
And there's one of two ways they can go. Actually, there's one of three ways they can, for the Premier class, they can take down the Rally One car. They'll detune it with smaller restrictor, less aero, take the hybrid out. Then Rally Two cars will be beefed up a little bit, more power, bigger restrictor, more aero. And so those two options are on the table. And actually, I sort of said that there were three options. That's one option, that we will have those as regulations for next year. Mm. The idea behind that is to bring the competition closer, to give local drivers, national heroes, the likes of Hayden Paddon. If we ever came back here to a New Zealand round of the championship, Hayden could put a kit on his
I-20.
And then he would have nearly 300 horsepower compared to what will be 330 from a Rally One car. But it'll have more aero, and it's the idea is to bring those people in, give them an opportunity to potentially win a rally. For me, it would never. Paddon's probably a bad example because he's maybe the one of the guys that actually could just about do it.
Get on the podium, I would say.
Yeah.
Just about get on the podium in an R5 plus car. I'm not sure he could win. I'm not sure anyone.
I think you're right. But so that's the option that's being pushed by the FIA and pushed quite hard. You know, a couple of weeks ago, completely out of nowhere, came that Instagram reel, which came from the FIA highlighting these changes as though the changes had been made.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took everybody by surprise, all of the other stakeholders. Nobody had really seen it coming. And then towards the middle to back end of last week, we started to hear a little bit of disquiet from the manufacturers, and in the approach to this meeting, Monday, Tuesday meeting of WRC Commission this week, the teams got together and they wrote a letter to the FIA saying we would like to remain with Rally One as it is until the end of 2026, exactly the homologation cycle that was originally planned.
But here's what gets me, David. Here's what gets me. You in Kenya, certainly in the service park, there was a lot of disquiet. That was the first chance to speak to the service park since the working group had put forward their proposals. There was a lot of disquiet. And one of the biggest talking points is, you know, this has all taken us by surprise. How can that have happened? How can that have happened? How can David Richards and Robert Reed, how can they have sat down, assessed the current situation, assessed the needs, come up with a proposal without consulting the major stakeholders, who are the manufacturers? And they didn't. They didn't consult with the major stakeholders. I find that phenomenal.
But I think I would imagine that you would get a very different version from DR and from Robert. And it depends on what level of consultation. From what I could understand, the stakeholders were kept in the loop. And but did they?
They
have
say
the
they won, David. They say they won.
I mean, the depth of technical. Admittedly, there's no technical regulations actually written at the moment, is there? So,
but here's the thing. I'm putting my hand up. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that to me has me absolutely screams concern. It screams absolute concern. David Richards, when he's put on the spot about this R5 Plus kit.
Rally 2 Plus.
Rally 2 Plus kit. When he's put on the spot, you know, about a cost, he comes up and he seems to pluck it out of nowhere. Out of blooming nowhere, the cost for this kit. It is absolute pie in the sky. Now, if he talked to the manufacturers, if he'd been to one or two more events,
yeah,
if he'd perhaps had a little more. And I'm not, I love David Richards to bits. David Richards was the first person I ever met in WRC. And I love him to bits. And I respect him enormously. I'm not convinced he was the right guy for this job. I think he's got it wrong. But for him, for someone of David's standing to sit there and say, yes, we can do it for 5,000 euros, it's just nonsense.
But more than anything, Cole, DR is somebody who manufactures car parts. You know, he's building Dacia's. Dakar guy, he's built the ProDrive Hunter. He knows the cost of bits. Not carbon fibre, but just bits.
Bits. And, bits and, that go on cars. Yeah. As you know, we talked to Richard Milner about it, and he said he'd been talking to Nicky Grist the week before, and he asked Nicky Grist, you know, top-line helmet, what is that going to cost me? 5,000 euros.
And that's what they're talking about. And for the same price, for that same 5,000 euros, they're expected to put a new rear wing on the car, a new air restrictor on the turbo, and potentially paddle shift, and a new exhaust.
My local garage wouldn't put that on my Audi A5 for 5,000 euros.
No.
They wouldn't do it.
It is bizarre.
But David, so the problem for me is then I start questioning everything else.
Yes, that's the bit for me, that when that figure of 5,000 euros first came out, immediately it raises eyebrows,
right,
and it does undermine the rest of what could be a very coherent bunch of
as we've already said,
and
a lot of really good stuff there, yeah, that people aren't talking about, that, yeah, people aren't, no, giving them credit for.
Because the headline here is the 5,000 euro thing, yeah, which it is never going to happen. Yeah. It simply can't happen, and the cost probably would be closer to, I would imagine, 20,000 euros.
Yari Marti reckons 20 grand.
So why
least
not just come out and say that? And ultimately, if you've got a frontline, a brand new i20 or whatever Rally 2 car, the investment of another 20,000 for a kit to potentially challenge for, like you say, a WRC podium, you're going to put the money.
Of course you are, and it's good value.
Yeah,
your 5 grand is ludicrous. Sounds ludicrous. Sounds cheap. Sounds unworkable. Yeah. 20 grand, actually, yeah, I can see that working at 20 grand, and I don't understand where that figure came from, and more importantly, why? Why? Because David Richards will say nothing unless he's thought it through. He's thought about it. He won't say anything unless he thinks there's something to be gained from saying it. And I don't understand why. I don't understand why.
My feeling with that, and I thought when I first heard it, I thought, okay, well, maybe it can be sensible and we can do it for 5,000 if that's a kit of parts that is produced by the FAA. They make it. They take a hit on the cost of development and production and everything, and then you buy it off the FAA. Fair enough. That's a good idea, and that works. Every manufacturer is going to get the same kit. There's no deviation at all, but it's not that way. The teams are all expected. So Malcolm Wilson is expected to now go away and develop a kit that he can only sell for 5,000 euros. That's going to cost him tens of thousands of euros to develop and put the R&D into. And
make a profit from at the end of the day, which Malcolm has to.
It's never going to happen.
It's bizarre, but it does... I think, make you ask questions. But you're going back to the main topic, the fact that the teams have got together and said, look, you know, we want to stay with this. What are the chances? What are the chances we're going to stick with it, the current formula? But, sorry, that is one question. The other question for me is that Robert Reed and David Richards should have been looking a little bit further ahead than 9 months down the line, 10 months down the line. I think the most important thing is we get the 2027 regulations right.
And in fairness to them, they are. That's another part of the working group is opened the door. And you remember the original communication from the meeting said, you know, they're looking at electric, they're looking at everything, hydrogen. So they are looking down the line at 2027. But I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that all of the teams want them to focus their efforts on that and just leave 2026, which is tomorrow. It's around the corner.
25 next tomorrow.
25, sorry, yeah. Leave that alone because, you know, we're not fundamentally, we're not going to bring in a new manufacturer in the next 9 months because of the changes we make now. So even for 26, we're not going to do that. So just leave it as it is. And I have to say when...
And you could leave. Sorry, David, again, to interrupt you. You stop mid-flow. That's not like you. You could just leave it as it is and still develop this Rally 2 Plus.
I don't see the need for it. And this, you know, just... We'll come back to the other point, but this kind of goes back to where we were talking about European Championship. For me, I don't think we need a Rally 2 Plus car, and if we do, then potentially we just use that in WRC. Let's not allow that car to go to European Championship because we do have a developing market for Rally 2 cars, a developed market for Rally 2 cars in ERC, and this is potentially where it can really impact on... you know, one of the original suggestions was just to go Rally 2 for WRC. Take away Rally 1 cars, too expensive, and they are too expensive. I say they're too expensive, they're not, but there's just not enough value in the championship to support them, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so I think we don't need Rally 2 Plus cars, all around the world. I don't think we do. I think if they want to be in WRC, fine, but I don't see the need for them. You know, I think what we need now, and you know, when I first started talking to everybody about this whole idea, I was sold on Rally 2 because as a championship, I don't think we can afford Rally 1 cars right now. Manufacturers are not coming to the sport, firstly, because the cars are expensive to develop, and secondly, most importantly, there's not, as we've said, there's not the value in the championship. They're not going to come and get a huge amount of publicity. And that's something that we're addressing as well. You know, the promoter does a fantastic job. You know, you look at the product of Rally.tv, WRC Plus, it's great. You know, they do, given the geography of everything, everywhere we go, it's sensational that you can actually sit and watch every single stage. That's amazing. But by their own admission within the promoter, they need to promote what we're doing. You know, you look... The standout has to be, I know you've got a lot of promoters that you like in all sorts of sports, but Bernie Eccleston, he fixed everything. Mm. You know, you always knew when there was a Formula One race on. It was great, and we're missing that, and that's what's keeping manufacturers out right now. So I think there is a danger that we're going to fiddle with the regulations for 2025, and we should be under no illusion here that the Toyota is about the only manufacturer that I think we could rely on to stay.
Absolutely.
We've seen that they've already tested potential prototype cars for 2025 with those new, in fact, in Rally 1 and Rally 2, they've taken the hybrid off, they've done all of the bits and pieces. We could take that as a decent nod that they'll be here. But equally, I think a lot of that work has come from Finland. I'm not too sure how much Toyota in Japan has been involved. So we don't know what's going on in the boardroom in Japan. If they're suddenly seeing that there's the potential for their Rally 2 car to beat their Rally 1 car, where's the sense in that for a manufacturer? So Toyota, potentially, they're the strongest to stay. Hyundai and M Sport Ford have both made really worrying noises that if the FIA goes down the road that it's seemingly trying to force us down, they could be gone.
Well, I think Hyundai are a very big doubt if the changes are as extreme as are being suggested. I think Hyundai is a very big doubt. And I put the point to Richard Milner, you know, when hybrid was first mooted and then the hybrid regulations were developed, that was very much, you know, Ford were very much the driving force behind that. You know, unless you go on M-Sport, you know, unless we go hybrid, Ford aren't interested. Mm. They have to go hybrid. And I put it to Richard, you know, but if we take the hybrid out, does that not mean that Ford will also go? And he was very, very... You know, he was non-committal about answering that. Which I found interesting. I found really interesting. I thought, well, what does that mean? And I'm not sure what it means.
But there's an automotive shift, isn't there, at the minute, that EVs were everything. That was where we had to go. And we've seen manufacturers are really moving away because just, you know, some of the greatest brains in the automotive world, they don't know which way to go
now. But David, I know that you roll your eyebrows or your eyes every time I mention this, but it's why we have to look at potentially a formula that is inclusive, that includes everything, that appeals to everyone.
I agree now.
And it's, do you?
Totally, Colin.
It's difficult, and I know it's difficult.
You're beating me down on it.
I'm beating you down. You know, what we're talking about here is equalization of technology. And for me, you're placed to the strengths of rallying.
Yeah.
Your rallying is about as real as it gets when it comes to motorsport. You know, it's about as real as it always was about your cars that you could buy, you were more or less seeing out on the stages. But it was also just the most incredible testing and proving ground for new technologies. And manufacturers saw the value in it. Case in point is that ridiculous machine that Audi invested. I would guess not much less than 200 million euros, maybe more in that machine for Dakar, maybe more than that. When you look at the operational work, maybe more than that. I don't know what they invested.
I was going to say the science was there, but I'm not entirely sure the science really ever
I'm not sure.
There.
I'm not sure what they were testing, but they saw the opportunity to try something different, to test something different, and to prove something with their technology. And they did it.
To win Dakar with an EV that was powered
by
a touring car engine.
Yeah. And the fuel consumption was actually, yeah, very, 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 very close to what it would have been anyway. But the point was, you know, the guys that run the Dakar, you know, had a set of regulations that allowed Audi to say, yeah, we can come and we can test this year and we can do it. And we might spend 200-300 million, but it's money well spent.
And it was the racing was close.
It was remarkable. And okay, the margins are very, very different in Dakar. And if you give someone an extra kilowatt of energy, it's you know, so what? It's neither here nor there, because you're not talking about tenths of a second, you're talking about seconds and minutes.
Yeah.
Now, the argument, and I talked to someone high up in the FIA who freaked, and he freaked not because it was impossible, he freaked because it was difficult. Really, really difficult. Really difficult. But if you get buy-in from everyone, then they have to respect the people who are making the decisions about the handicapping, the whatever it is, the equalizations. You have to accept that. You have to go with it. And if everyone buys in, well, there's no one that loses.
No,
you know?
Because, you know, we know that Alpine had said they would sign up to the WRC tomorrow if it went electric. And we know that there are other manufacturers that are very, very keen. Toyota, for example, are looking a lot at hydrogen.
If they could run a hydrogen car.
Why not? And you look back to the days, I know this, you know, we're dinosaurs now, but look back at Group B, which allowed you very loose-ish set of regulations. We had front-engine cars with Audis. We had mid-engine cars with the Peugeot. We had superchargers and turbochargers on the Lancia. We had naturally aspirated 6R4s, everything. And actually, the results were never that close. But it gave everybody the opportunity to come and do what they want. Yeah. And at the minute, all we seem to be having is barriers to entry for manufacturers coming to WRC. And we need to smash those down.
Absolutely.
And if your balance of performance is the way forward for 27, then let's get on with it. And let's absolutely, you know, fundamentally, when I saw David Richards and Robert Reed in Baku in December last year, and we talked a lot about what they were doing, my massive point to them was you must get the communication, the news out early. January, February time, we must know where we're going for 25 and where we're going for 27. Mm. And we're now well into April. It's going to be June before World Motorsport Council signs off on any regulations for 25. That is bonkers.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable. It's far, far too late. And for me, the common sense way now, much as I supported Rally 2 as a front line for the WRC, I think it could have worked. And Cali Rovanperä, you moaned about oh, there's not enough power. There's not enough power. But still, put Cali Rovanperä in a wheelbarrow and I'll go and watch him.
Absolutely.
Every day of the week. But that, again, that comes back and says, would that then kill the ERC? I don't know. But for me, the big thing now is we just need regulations to stay as they are. 25, 26. Okay. We know that the hybrid deal is in place. Compact Dynamics, we've spoken to Oliver Blamberger. He said that they've got a deal so they can continue to supply the parts that are needed for the next 2 years.
And they need to... It's a bit harsh to say they need to up the game a little bit.
No, we know there are going to be issues. But, you know, one thing that I've discovered, that we've discovered, Colin, in the last 2.5 years, when drivers are saying, oh, no, hybrid problem, it's a reset, isn't it? You know, yes, you will get sometimes where you're going to run out of hybrid, but now it happens reasonably frequently. The drivers are much calmer about it because they know they're going to get to the end of the stage, reset it.
And away they go. And they also know that not all of the hybrid issues, but a number of them are actually caused by something the driver's done.
Yeah.
You know, and okay, they're not completely infallible. If you take a big knock to the car, quite often it does knock the hybrid off. But the drivers know that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like saying, is that rock, can I go straight over the top of that rock?
Yeah.
Or is it going to bust my suspension?
Yeah.
And go straight over the top of it, so we take a cut there. You know, you've got to almost factor in, is that going to knock the hybrid off or not?
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And it's part of your note making. And it's, I agree with you. I think when you think about the actual technological ability of that hybrid unit, it is incredible. And proving what they can do with a hybrid unit in unbelievably demanding circumstances,
and
they deserve more credit.
They certainly do.
That was literally 2 minutes. I've completely changed my mind. 2 minutes. Remarkable.
But also within the confines of a very strict sort of financial deal that was put to them. You know, there was not a lot of money for Compact Dynamics on the motors and the power units and Chrysler with the battery to make a lot of money. So he was built to very much a budget.
Mm.
And don't forget, you know, part of the development budget was actually funded by the FIA, because when Citroën pulled out, they divided the development budget by four. Citroën went, and then the FIA had to step in. And so there's not been a lot of cash out. So I think it's fair to say that Compact Dynamics have taken a lot of stick, and they deserved a lot of stick in the very early days. But now it's not bad.
I agree.
And fundamentally, Cole, the big thing here is that these cars are sensational to watch.
Oh, yeah.
They are insanely quick. They are, by some distance, the fastest rally cars we've ever seen in the World Rally Championship, anywhere on planet Earth. And, you know, touching wood, holding, clinging to this wooden table in front of us, they are the safest.
Mm-hmm.
We've
seen some enormous shunts.
Yeah.
Some enormous shunts that drivers and co-drivers have walked away from.
And,
it's incredible.
You absolutely have to take your hat off and chapeau to the FIA for what they've done, because they've created, and again, they've invested in that safety structure, that safety cell. So whatever comes, and this is one thing, you know, that all of that said, it was Oit Tanak that in your interview in Kenya with him, brilliant interview, which actually he raised that point and said, how is it? And I thought of this, and I thought, I'm missing something here. But when Tanak said it, he's dead right. The slower cars are getting, the less safe cars are getting faster, and the safe cars are getting slower.
Yeah, the safest cars we've ever had are getting slower. That doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense. So they're promoting more speed in the Rally 2 cars, which is a production chassis, and has obvious safety issues that,
So here's the thing, David. You know Robert Reed and David Richards as well as anyone. Are they the type of characters that can turn around and go, yeah, we got that wrong, so let's put that. Let's put that aside for just now. Let's concentrate on the stuff that you agree that does look positive, that we can enact, that we can actually all work together on. Let's put that aside and leave it. Are they the sort of characters? This is my concern. They're not. I don't know them as well as you.
It becomes
a battle of egos. And my God, we know that. No, it does. It 100% does. And we know there are some massive egos around.
There's undoubtedly some big egos. There's some big agendas around that table in Geneva through Monday and Tuesday. But fundamentally, Robert and David are both now political figures. And they haven't got there without having that ability for compromise. Of course they can.
Okay.
And both of them throughout their careers, you know, for DR as a co-driver and then as a team principal, running the commercial side of the World Rally Championship, and now into everything he does with Motorsport UK as the chairman there, he understands the need for compromise. Yes, they will be able to.
That's good.
And Robert is exactly the same. You know, they will do what is best for the sport. And it's I think they've gone a long way down the road. They've obviously, the technical department, Xavier Mestalampino, has put a lot of work and a lot of effort and thought into the potential changes. But maybe if you were looking at those changes in 18 months, then okay, you could understand that, but not in 6 months.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does make sense. So let's wait for some more news on that. You mentioned David Richards there, Motorsport UK. Are we allowed to talk about the first round of the British Championship and the television programme that came out? Is it a bit churlish of us to talk about that?
It was a difficult one, wasn't it? You know, I was on the Northwest stages, and your heart had to go out to the organisers. It was the perfect storm of some shocking weather and just difficult conditions. The second stage that we were actually on that was blocked by a competitor accident where in a really narrow section of the stage. And you know, I spoke to the organisers and said to market the organisers and said, why don't you just drag the car off the road? There was a junction. You could have just hauled it off the road, move it. And he said, yeah, but you don't understand. He said, if we drag it down the road, we damage the road. The local council do a survey of the road before we go through. Then they do a survey afterwards. And if we've scored the road, we're responsible. That'll cost us thousands to get that. So we have to make a judgment call. Mm. So that they lost that stage. Then there was a more serious accident which required medical intervention. Fortunately, the crew were okay. Then there was this whole question of there was a tractor on the stage and it wasn't a tractor. And I saw a couple of people that put comments on my piece saying there was no tractor. Categorically, I can show them the picture. There was a tractor. It was a farm vehicle. It looked like some sort of.
So was it or wasn't it a tractor?
It was a farm. It was like a big ATV thing, a big sort of side by side.
Yeah.
But it was on the road.
Whatever's on the road, you can't run.
You can't do it. Yeah.
No, listen, I felt for the organisers.
Sorry, just to say, so that compromised how much action footage they would have got, the ability. Stages were cancelled and there weren't many stages. I think it was a six or eight stages, maybe 10, I can't remember, two loops.
Yeah.
And they didn't have as much time to get action footage or onboard footage. So their resource to build a program from was impacted.
No question it was impacted. No question. And fair play to Motorsport UK for getting the deal with ITV. You know, as we know, David, you know, terrestrial television is still important. Not in my view, the most important thing for promoting the sport going forward. It really isn't.
No.
But it is still important. But what's really, really important is that when we do get the opportunity, we make the most of it. And I fear that with that first programme, and it was nothing to do with the amount of action in the programme, there was just too much about that programme that was poorly constructed. Yeah.
You've worked in the BRC. You produced some of the, and not just saying this because you're here, but with Mark James as a producer, you know,
with Hay Fisher as the TV production company.
Great. It was an interesting, intriguing programme with you and Reece Yates going for, was it a drive-through or something?
McDonald's, yeah.
That's what people want to see.
That's exactly what they want to see, quality television.
It's very easy for us to sit here in room 492 in the lovely Scenic Hotel in Dunedin and say, you know, pull them apart, but it wasn't a great program. I'm sure it will get better. But, you know, I would like to say that to see Holly McRae out there doing the interviews, it was fantastic.
We'd never saw Holly McRae.
But we heard her voice. And that's my point.
Why didn't we see her? Why wasn't she introduced?
And you know, David Addison, just
fantastic voice.
Fantastic voice, is one of the best.
Who wrote the script for him?
Yeah.
It was all over the place.
It was difficult to follow. But it will. I'm sure it'll get better.
It has to. It absolutely has to get better.
This
is very parochial. But then you and I, we've got, you know, we're desperate for British rallying to succeed. It's been in some really, really desperately low places. Even last year, my goodness me, the last two rounds, five entries, six entries, something like that in the BRC, it was at a low point. And this year was heralded with this incredible entry for an incredible rally with some great cars.
For me, to see Keith Cronin back was fantastic. I wasn't at the time. I didn't know that Chris Ingram was committed to the whole year. just great. And you know, for me, okay, it was Chris's. Everybody talks about it was Chris's local event, the North West Ages. I'm pretty sure he doesn't know any of those roads particularly.
No.
He just happens to
He was impressive.
He was very impressive.
Yeah.
Was, I have to say, Marion Evans as
well.
Who was really quick, and it was great to see that Toyota out there with the Castrol colours. Shame we didn't get an invite to the
launch.
To the launch. We would have been there. We could. I mean, can you imagine what Dirtfish could have done on the subject of Castrol livery Toyota? Oh. We would have loved it. But sadly,
the world's best rally writer writing the stories and waxing lyrically. Can't even say it lyrically about it. But no, listen, enough. And I am only sore about that because there is such an opportunity there. And I do wish them the very, very best
British
with that program.
Deserve.
Number one, get your editing right. Number two, use more of Holly McRae. What we found when we used Holly in Japan was she is a delight to have around. She's very, very good at what she does. She is fantastic on camera.
Massive
Put
energy.
Her on camera.
Yeah.
Put her on camera and let's see a bit more of Holly and let's see a bit more of the action. But you know, fair play to them for getting the deal. Do not squander it.
Absolutely.
My only bit of advice. So there we go. Anything else you wanted to cover, David?
No.
Are you sure? You're absolutely sure. Do you want to rack that little brain of yours just to make sure there's not anything?
In fairness, there's not a lot of capacity in the brain now.
It's the jet lag just about to kick in. We're going for fish and chips.
Well, that's exactly
it. We're going for fish and chips.
Tommy rumbling going on, and you talked about fish and chips, so I think it could be a good time to sign off and go get some
absolutely right. Folks, thank you very much. You know, we are in Dunedin covering the Otago Rally. Keep an eye on all of our social channels this weekend for updates from the rally. Plenty on YouTube as well. Take a look at that. Should be fun. Thank you very much again for joining us, folks, on Spin the Rally Pod.